Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations with Cleo live on blogtalkradio.com every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 p.m. Join the conversation at 347-826-9597 or hit me up on Twitter at Real, RealMSCLEO. All right, my dears, happy hump day to each and every one of you. It is February 20th, 2013. A delicious Wednesday here in Lake Worth. Today has been just sublime. However, I am aware that the weather is doing many other things elsewhere in this country right now and around the planet. You know me, I still say that there are any number of events that have occurred in this last week that are similar to layered onions or perhaps a leek, because there are so many things that they will not tell us about until well after the fact. But you know, I'm going to keep my nose poking around and running down every rabbit hole I can find. But just as an encapsulation from Monday's show, which is the epitome of a Mercury retrograde burp, as I would put it. and what that did is my dear friend, and she is like a daughter to me, and bless her little heart, her beautiful, beautiful, this little girl named Gia is absolutely breathtaking. You know, babies are just delicious, and my father was a very funny man, a very loving man, but there weren't many things that I ever heard him say that I was like, oh, Daddy, I can't believe you did say that. But when I was, I don't know, probably 11, 12, 13, something like that, we were talking about babies, and my daddy looked at me, and he said, you know, all babies are not pretty babies, you know. And he said, some babies look like monkeys. I said, Daddy, you can't say that. It's a baby. He said, look here. He said, some of them look like monkey, man. Leave it done. So please, no emails. I don't want any text. My father is on the other side, and you really don't want to come up against me when we're talking about my daddy, because I know my daddy almost walked on water. You understand? So I'm not really sure who he was. But, you know, nonetheless, that is the vibration, and that's kind of the message, you know, that I want to send today, is that, you know, even when you are talking to people, and we all can be hypersensitive, but in this coming Mercury retrograde, all right, your communication is going to have to be succinct. You're going to have to be slow to react, all right? You are going to have to be patient with self and certainly with each and every other being, individual creature that you encounter. And I'm going to beg of you, I'm going to implore that you think before you speak, email, or text, all right? Because it seems like sometimes when we get to that electronic phase of things, or we want to leave one wicked voicemail, we forget that these words and expressions and whatnot have been recorded for all time. So be mindful, because you don't want to have to apologize. You understand? You would like to be able, it's not a bad thing to apologize, it's a very humbling experience, but you don't want your constant conversation to be about apologies, because you don't stop and think before you speak, email, or text. You understand? So that's what I want you all to keep in front of you. I mean, I've already had some of my electronics doing strange things. Yesterday, my keypad on my smartphone, all of a sudden, for no reason, none at all, it didn't want to work. So I shut it down, turn it back on, whatever, and it finally worked. I had sent a text to my landscaper. I thought something was wrong. And I called him this morning, and I said, y'all all right? And he said, yeah, I'm fine. And I said, well, what happened? He said, I don't know what y'all talk about. Well, he never got the text that I sent him 2 days ago. So when you start to encounter this on more of a regular basis, the reason I bring that up, because guess what? If somebody didn't get the text, then there you have it. You understand? You're going to get upset because you think they should have gotten the text, but what if they didn't get it? And I know that some of you are saying, but Miss Cleo, my boyfriend uses that excuse all the while. Or my girlfriend, every time I turn around, she say her phone did dead or something like this. Right now, you're going to have to roll with it. Because otherwise, you may find yourself in a disagreement that really won't be worth it. Because if there's anything going on that you need to know about, Monday coming, we got a full moon, all right? So for those of you who are doing things in the dark and you don't want people to find out about it, you might want to stay on the down low, extra down low, all right? And for those of you who are kind of investigating and you have on your Sherlock Holmes hat trying to figure out who's doing what and who's doing that, trust that this new moon, I mean this full moon actually, may aid you. Now here is the crux. Here is the rub, as Shakespeare would say. Understand that everything that you see and everything that you find and everything that is revealed to you in and around this full moon still will not be the complete picture. So I would continue to urge you to be mindful as you're moving through these next 3 weeks. And as I was in Ms. Claire, said it starts Saturday. All right, it does. But even check that out, because if you guys go back and you listen to Monday's show with all of the upheaval, I was off by a day. So I like to own when I fuck up, all right? So I was off by a day. So what we have is we have the retrograde occurring on the 23rd, all right? And that is Saturday. We have the full moon occurring on the 25th, and that is Monday. And bear in mind that both of these events are swirling and moving and navigating through Pisces. So if you are a Pisces sun sign, ascending, or moon sign, you will feel it's probably a bit more intensely than perhaps some other individuals. If you are Virgo, again, you will feel this a bit more intensely than some others will. But this is not a bad intensity. This intensity is all about that creativity, right, that I spoke of, that powerful creativity. But what we will be searching for and what our lesson is to come away from this Mercury retrograde will be that wonderful balance of creativity and practicality, all right? And we'll keep talking about it as we move through, as certain things come up for myself or some of my friends and family and even some of my clients. I don't mention anyone's name unless I say, Cleo, I don't care. And even then, I think about it twice. But we'll be talking about the different events and the different things so that you have some semblance of reference for when I say, you know, the perfect opportunity for balance, that creativity, that practicality and the wonderful dance that can occur, and the better yet, the fruits that can come from that kind of balance. So I want to send out some love out to my girl Nitra sit there in New York, because I know it's still a little chilly there. Sending out some love to my buddy in New York as well at the big Brandon Voss, amazing writer, all about the media, always in the know, freelance writer, and also writes often for The Advocate. So just wanted to let you all know. Now, today's show is very, very exciting, and I have been looking forward to this show. And it has been, most apropos, a very organic experience in its evolution. I met a young woman, oh my goodness, and probably about 6 months ago at my favorite coffeehouse, Mother Earth Coffee. You all hear me running at. And sitting outside and sitting under the mango tree. And she came over and she was talking, and somebody else said, oh, I'd like for you to meet Cleo. Maybe you can go on her show and talk about what you all are doing. And it was a real push for to one, label any product in a supermarket that has GE or GMO foods in it. And additionally, to be able to share just some basic knowledge with people about what we are eating. And the individual that introduced this young woman to me at the time, she's now moved on onto another project, but she definitely came and laid the groundwork. And then we just started to build on it. And I had some curiosity about the GE and the GMO. And not that I didn't know the terms, but I certainly didn't know what I should have known. And so I was poorly informed, not ill-informed, but poorly informed. And so I started out down this rabbit hole, and I'll be doggone if when I came to one hard right, I was able to find all of these individuals that had the knowledge. And, you know, part of my commitment this year with Conversations with Cleo is to bring the individuals. You understand? Last year, you all most of the time got to listen to my big mouth. Which is not that it's not entertaining, and it's not that I don't have knowledge to share, but I don't know everything. You understand? There ain't no way in the world, and I don't propose to know everything about everything. I can know a little something about some things, you understand? But I don't know everything about everything. But my objective is to bring those individuals to you all, and we can ask the questions together. Some of you that have seen this episode advertised for, I think it's been about the last 7 to 10 days, have emailed me and have reached out to me and even sent me questions from the old channel, Podbean. So it's a little bit interesting. We're trying to keep that bridge up a little bit longer until everyone finds their way here to Blog Talk Radio. So I have a few of those questions. I have a few questions, and we get to have on our show today Winona Hutter, who is the executive director of the Food and Water Watch organization, or .org, out of Washington, D.C. She is also the author of the book Foodopoly. I have gone on and I have just begun to read the book. I went on and I downloaded it. I'm not sure how well that's going to work for me. I do so much better when I can walk around with something that is tangible in my hands. But Winona Hutter is currently on her book tour right now. And I had invited Susan. You all remember when Susan came on the show a couple of weeks ago to begin to talk to us about the Let Me Decide campaign and about Food and Water Watch. And so she did recommend this book for me to read. And she said, well, by the way, she's going to be in Florida on her book tour. And I just happened to mention to Susan, what a joy and how delicious would that be to have Winona on the show. And that we could ask questions and we could really get into the nuts and bolts of the corporate side of this and the lobbyists and some of the things that you and I don't know anything about. But you and I actually have the power to effectuate some change. And I got to tell you, if we don't start here real, real soon, we're going to wish that we had. And then that just is lunacy, because if we have an opportunity to correct it now, we need to do so. I certainly think that you all are going to find her most, most intriguing and most interesting. So I do want you to go ahead and go get you some water. Go ahead and go get your coffee. Go ahead and get your pen and paper so you can take some notes. As when we come back from this quick break, we will be welcoming Winona Hutter, and I certainly hope I am pronouncing that properly, author of Foodopoly. It is going to be a show to enjoy, my dear. So hurry back, and I'll see you back here in 2 shakes. Have a special event coming up, like a wedding, concert, a big week visiting for a very important corporate meeting, or just a night out on the town with friends. Looking for that right limo service? Then check out Live Limo. 10% off your first service, 5% off when you open a corporate account. You can contact them at 800-557-5154, or if you're local, 561-414-9686. Check them out on Facebook, or you can visit their website at www.livelimousineusa.com.
Live Limo, the most reliable luxury transportation service in South Florida. Ask for Carlos or Nadla. Tell them Cleo sends our love. Need a little comfort food to satisfy your belly and your soul? Then stop by Mother Earth Coffee and Cafe. Homemade bread pudding, buttermilk pancakes, sweet potato hash browns, and homemade turkey sausage. And I'm just talking about breakfast. Don't forget those yummy turkey burgers and those veggie burgers as well. Stop by 410 2nd Avenue North or give her a call 561-460-8647. The line is sometimes long, but a meal is always worth the wait. Tell Patty Cleo sent you. All right, my dears, we are back and we are so excited. So join me in welcoming Winona Hutter, author of Foodopoly. Winona, do we have you clearly there?
I'm here. I'm so pleased to be here.
We are so excited. I got a giant goosebump. First, let me thank you for taking time out of your busy, busy schedule to come and visit us for a little bit and just chat with us about, you know, and I was saying to my audience earlier, you know, when you don't know where to go and be active, you just don't know. And I feel like I've had a come to church meeting here and that I feel like I can actually participate on a greater level with regard to how and what is going on with our food supply in this country. So I'm going to let you take the floor. I kind of want you to talk to my listeners about how did this become your passion and your commitment to bring and deal with the GE and the GMO food vibration?
Well, you know, I grew up on a farm in the 1960s, and I have a lot of respect for what it takes to grow food and to grow healthy food. And since I have been an activist for the last, really going on 40 years, I've seen how our food system has declined and how people are just not being fed properly. And
right.
Also, I've begun to really see how the companies that control our food are addicting people to junk food. So Americans spend about 90% of their food dollar budget on processed food. And these are generally foods that have a lot of sugar, salt, and fat in them and that aren't good for people.
Right.
And these companies have so much political power that they are that they're basically able to dictate the rules around our food system. So that's what has really impassioned me to work on food issues. I think it's a justice issue.
You know, I would definitely agree with you on so many of the points that you made there, Winona, because actually my partner and I were just talking this morning about that whole addiction to the sweets, you know what I'm saying? And they give you these different things and then and your body just reacts and continues to seek them out. And I think this is one of the reasons that we have an unhealthy weight issue in this country. You know, it's so much easier to pop everything into a microwave or here, there, that instantaneous has made us all a bit on the unhealthy side. Now, you said you grew up on a farm, and according to my notes in your bio, you also own a working farm in the Plains, Virginia, correct?
That's exactly right. I inherited my family's farm, and my husband runs it today as a vegetable farm, a community-supported agriculture program that feeds about 500 families.
You just gave me another goosebump.
You all, did you just hear what Winona said? She said that it feeds, it's community, which is one of my buzzwords, because it's all about, we're not coming back from any of this until we recognize how important community is. And then sustainable and feeds about 500 families. I love that, because that's not my fantasy. That's what I'm working towards. No. You are also the executive director of Food and Water Watch, which is an organization out of D.C. And elaborate just a bit more on what you all are doing and what you have been doing.
Well, Food and Water Watch is an advocacy organization that helps empower grassroots groups and individuals to take action to improve our food system and to make sure that our water continues to be safe and affordable. And we have 16 offices around the country, and we're very excited to be opening an office in Fort Lauderdale to work here in Florida. And the kinds of things that we do is we try to prevent the complete corporate control of our food system. For instance, with genetic engineering, we're trying to work for labeling. Right now, people don't know if they're eating genetically engineered food, and we think people have a right to know. And we know that, according to polling, that 95% of people believe they have a right to know whether their food is genetically engineered. And so we're working for federal and state-based labeling. And that takes many, many people getting involved, and that's what I mean by helping to empower grassroots organizations and individuals to get involved in these very important food and water issues today.
Well, you know, that's we're going to take this and Susan's visit, as well as yours, Winona, and as part of our commitment here at Conversations with Cleo, we are going to start to build on that today. We are going to sign up. I just want to interject quickly that I've got a couple of different ways for all of you as you continue to listen to the show. Let's see. There is Foodopoly, www.foodopoly, just as I'm saying it, food as opposed to mano, .org. And there is also, you can visit Winona on her Facebook page as well. We'll have our Twitter handle coming up here, as well as the Food and Watch website, Food and Water Watch website, .org as well. You can sign up. Actually, Susan gave me some knowledge about the salmon, the GMO salmon, and you were able to, I put it out on the air for any of my listeners to go and sign the petition. So that the FDA wouldn't just kind of pass it over. Now, I do want to talk a bit about how you were given some wonderful accolades, and as I said, I have just gotten the book. Talk to me a little bit, Winona, about your perception of the agricultural policy in this country and how the lobbyists. And we can start with just the big M, Monsanto, and the other likes therein. How have they kind of come in and creeped in and taken this over to the point where we're at now?
Well, you know, the biotech industry with Monsanto in the lead is a good example of how our public policy is being bought by these companies. We did a study and found that over a 10-year period, the biotech industry spent more than $500 million, $572 million in lobbying and campaign contributions to promote biotech in Congress. This was to federal office holders. And they hired 13 former members of Congress in 100 lobby shops in Washington, and 300 former aides to Congress and to the White House. And so that's how our public policy is basically being made dysfunctional, why our system isn't working, because these companies can actually lobby And, you know, it's like a legalized system of bribery. So that's why it's so important that people get involved to be a countervailing force to all of this money and the companies. And when you also look at the lobbying, we have basically 20 food companies in this country that are they manufacture most of the brands that you see in your grocery store.
True.
And even though it looks like there's a lot of choice when you go into a grocery store, a few companies hold and own all of the brands. So we actually have very little diversity. And these companies then have a tremendous amount of political and economic influence in our country. And then we have four large retail chains with Walmart at the top that that even are more powerful than the food processing companies. Some of those processing companies are PepsiCo, which is the largest food company
in the country.
Nestle, Kraft, those kinds of companies. But if you look at Walmart, one out of three grocery dollars goes to Walmart, and the Walmart heirs have more wealth than the bottom 40% of Americans. Now, there's something wrong with that picture.
There is something so out of balance about that, Winona. It's so out of balance. Now, you know, talk to me about as well, because, you know, I'm all about the independent farmer. And how are these practices? I mean, because we've talked on my show before when we started the series about the subsidies and this, that, and the other, and how they make it quite difficult for the small farmer and more so the small organic farmer to succeed. How is the efforts of some of these larger companies squeezing out our smaller farmer? I think it's important for people to understand that.
Well, you know, I think that it is, too, because there is a lot of confusion about the subsidy system. The subsidy system is about 17 years old. And what happened is, in 1996, after the U.S. joined the World Trade Organization and got involved in trade agreements like NAFTA, all of the regulations that prevented overproduction of crops and helped manage our crop supply, like we used to have a grain reserve, all of those programs were taken away because these big companies lobbied to deregulate because they wanted overproduction of crops like corn and soy and wheat because these big companies actually benefit from that. So once the supply management programs were gone, that meant that farmers planted everything that they could with corn and soy just to survive because there was such an overproduction that it made the price of these commodities drop.
Mm-hmm.
So what ended up happening in the first couple of years is the price of corn dropped by 50%, the price of soy dropped by 40%. Farmers weren't even making enough money to cover their costs of producing the crops. So there was a lot of political pressure on Congress to do something. So rather than reinstating some of these common sense programs to keep this from happening, taxpayer money was used to help the farmer continue to survive. Now, what's confusing is that 82% of farmers depend on this government subsidy. And, of course, the large ones do, but unfortunately, the smaller and medium-sized ones do, too, and their average income is just over $19,000, half of it from this subsidy. So we need to do more than deal with the subsidy. We need to reinstate some of these common-sense policies, and we need to reimagine our food system. We need to do something about these very large companies that are benefiting from this overproduction of grains.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at how much money they save, the soft drink industry saved about $1 billion the first 7 years after that deregulation. The meat industry spent about $4 billion. But we hear that it's all the farmers' fault because it's a lot easier to blame the farmer than it is to blame these big companies that lobbied for these programs and now really benefit from the subsidy system. So we believe that we need to save small and mid-sized farms because farmers need to be partners in reinvesting and revisualizing our food system.
I agree with you. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I don't know if you had a chance or if you've heard about, I'm going to go down the rabbit hole a little bit further on this one. But there is a small farmer, 75-year-old man in Indiana, Vernon Hugh Bowman, who will be 75 years old and I'm very young because he's taking on Monsanto. And his case will be brought on the next agenda before the U.S. Supreme Court because Monsanto has sued him for the patent on the soybeans. He decided he didn't want to buy new ones every year. So he found a bit of a loophole. And so but you know, I want everyone to hear me when I say that this is a 75-year-old man who definitely remembers what food is supposed to taste like. He's been a farmer. He's committed his life. And yet some big, big lobby-filled, money-grubbing company is trying to squash this 175-year-old Indiana farmer. You know, and like you said, there's something so wrong with that. We talk about bullying in this country. We are being bullied into eating food that does not benefit us, mind, body, or soul. And until we decide that we're going to do something about it, then nothing happens. Because I really don't think that people recognized how much money was in the whole GE and GMO foodopoly. Because I thought when Susan told me that title, I said, oh, that's brilliant. That's absolutely brilliant. Now, let me ask you something, Winona. How long did you work on this work, which is it seems to be so complete and so full of knowledge? How long did you work on Foodopoly?
Well, it took me about 9 months to write it, but I've been working on these issues for many years. So
right.
I had gathered a lot of material. But I worked on it every single day for 12 or 15 hours a day. So
oh, my goodness,
it was
a labor of love.
Yes, it was quite a project.
Right, right. Well, I want to share just a couple of other things here. In D.C., 120 people attended her book signing at the Bus Boys and Poets, and I have friends in D.C. I actually have my stepson and my grandsons and his lovely wife live in Silver Spring, Maryland. And I have two dear friends in Alexandria, Virginia, so very much in that town. But I was wondering if you could share for me what it felt like when you visited the small town in West Virginia where 50 people came out and those same 50 people bought your book.
Well, you know, it's just great to go and meet and talk to people around the country and to realize that we have such a vital food movement that's growing and becoming more powerful. And this is really the way that we're going to change our food system. So I'm just humbled when I go to bookstores and do a talk and have the opportunity to communicate with so many really dedicated activists and people who are doing everything that they can in their community to improve the food system.
Well, boy, we appreciate you. Now, I know you're here on tour. What other places can we let people know to come visit you while you're here?
Well, I'm going to be at a lot of places, and the best place to find my schedule is to go to foodopoly.org, and
okay.
You can see my day-by-day schedule. I am going to be down in the Coral Gables area for several days doing some events. I'm going to be over in the Tampa, Sarasota area, and up in West Palm Beach and Fort Lauderdale.
Well, excellent. That sounds excellent. I've got listeners all over the state, so you all roll out the carpet for Winona. This woman knows what she's talking about. She's going to be able, and I'm going to put up foodandwaterwatch.org on the website so you all can follow and find out what we can do. I also have made notes on my own personal phone where I can text WATCH, WATCH, to 69866, and they will keep me updated with emails and alerts and other things. And I challenge all of you
that listen to my show, you all know I'm a foodie, but I'm also about the food that we put together needs to be something that sustains us. It does not need to be something that they will say to us 20 years from now, oh, that's the reason why, you know, the children had ADHD. That's the reason why children are being born allergic to this vegetable or that vegetable. Let me ask you, Winona, just one last question, and this one came in while we were on the air. And one of my listeners wants to know, have there been any actual studies about the links between some of the allergies and the childhood conditions that seem to be becoming so prevalent in our society, along with the consumption by mothers as well as the children of the GE and the GMO foods?
Well, you know, one of the problems is that in our country, the research on these issues is done by the companies. And so we don't have the body of research that we should have on these important links. And because these plants are patented, it's also difficult for scientists to get a hold of these plants legally and to do the investigations. And, of course, then there isn't the research dollars available for objective scientists to do the kind of research that we need on genetically engineered food or on a whole host of other chemicals. So, you know, I think what we need to do is use our best common sense and eat from plants that are not genetically engineered. I think that most of the processed food that uses these ingredients isn't good for us. And so it's not too tough a decision to just keep our families away from the processed foods that utilize these genetically engineered ingredients.
You know, I've become very, very conscious now of just, you know, once upon a time it was about reading the calories. Then once upon a time
right.
it was about seeing the sodium, you know, and cholesterol and this. Now I am looking, I have a pretty steadfast rule, Winona. My rule is if I can't pronounce the name of the ingredient on the package, then I don't eat it. Do you know what
rule.
I'm saying? Because if I'm a fairly
that
educated
woman. That's the best rule.
But, you know, it makes sense, you know. So I agree with you. I mean, myself and my partner, we're both over the age of 50, and we want to live longer. We want to live longer for our grandchildren. We want to live longer for ourselves. And she was probably a much better eater than I was at one point in time. But let me tell you something. I have completely restructured the way that we eat, the way that we live. We eat so much more fresh things. And I just will share with my listening audience, you know, that our rubbish has been cut in half by 50%, and our recycling is 30% less than because we're not buying all of this extra. You know, we're buying vegetables.
Great.
You know, we're buying fish and we're doing things that and wanting to get wild caught. I'm not interested in anything that's farm raised. But they'll have
right.
people think that the farm raised means it's good, you know?
That's right. That's exactly right. And you are living by the best rules to have a long and healthy life.
Winona, I love you. I celebrate you. We are going to stay in touch. Anything that Conversations with Cleo can do, you let us know. Not a hesitation on our part. We welcome the opportunity to, because I'm an old activist myself, darling, and we have, the model has changed. You know, used to be out on the streets with the picket signs. Now I'm inside a studio. I'm inside my living room, actually, and I'm really reaching out to people, and we're going to make this happen, because this is about not just me and Winona, because we're a little bit longer in the tooth, but this is about the children of tomorrow, the ones that aren't even born, because there's no reason that we should leave them crap and say this
That's
is what
right.
you consume. We need to leave them the same rich, luscious nutrients that we were raised on, and to let them know that getting back into the kitchen is a good thing, and with that good thing comes all of these other wonderful
foundations for being healthier, as I said, mind, body, and spirit. We hope you have a most successful tour here, Winona. And we're going to put everything up on our webpage and make sure that we stay connected. If there's an announcement or a petition you'd like for us to get out there, by no means hesitate. Get it to us. Have one of your people get it to us, Susan, and we will be on it right there with you.
Thank you so much, and I've really enjoyed talking to you.
I enjoyed you too. Have a wonderful rest of your trip, Winona.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. All right, my dears, we're going to take a quick pause for the cause, and I'll be back in two shakes. Let's talk about dog packs next. Ah! Dog pack snacks are made by hand in small batches from grade A USDA inspected ingredients. They are licensed by the Florida Department of Agriculture. Dog pack snacks use chicken, not chicken broth. They use apples, not applesauce. Lean meats for high protein, fruits and veggies that have excellent nutritional value. Cocoa tested and approved. Cocoa is the chief tester on board, and she is a divalicious canine. So visit her at www.dogpacksnacks.com. And if you'd like to follow Cocoa and her crew, hit them up on Twitter at dogpacksnacks. All righty, my dears. Wasn't that something? I again, recommend to all of you to go out and get the book or download the book or nook the book, however you do it with the electronics these days, or do like, you know, many do, and buy the old-fashioned book. Foodopoly is the title of the book. And I genuinely need you all to understand that this piece of literature may very well be to the current GE and GMO food, you know, hierarchy that Jungle Book was and Upton Sinclair was to the meat packing industry back in the 60s. Winona Hutter, please remember that name. That name will be one that will definitely be key when we look back over the history of this challenge to bring back healthy food and real food to our families and to our future children. So again, title of the book is Foodopoly, The Battle Over the Future of Food and Farming in America. Again, Winona, if you're in the sound of my voice, thank you so much. I genuinely do believe that you are the modern day Upton Sinclair Jr. So much, much joy in spreading the word, and we will continue to spread the word around here as well. You can visit also again at www.fwwatch.org, or you can go to www.foodandwaterwatch.org. You can spell out either one to go and see where Winona will be appearing while she's in Florida. Visit www.foodopoly.org/media-center/. Also, like her on Facebook at Winona Hutter, W-E-N-O-N-A-H. Hutter, H-A-U-T-E-R. And you can hit her up on Twitter, same way, at Winona Hutter. So I'm going to be following her. I'm going to be staying in touch. And you all know I will be bringing the information and sharing it with you. Now, I want to go ahead and share with you all today a couple of Black History moments. It is in a pre-recorded show. I did this show prior to the presidential election last year because I just felt that people did not have enough knowledge about how far we've come and perhaps where we've slipped back and where we need to head to. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and share with you Black History Post Reconstruction. A little bit of history about politicians in this country, and more specifically, Black politicians in this country, and some of the history, for whatever reason, has been left out. I'm not here to judge that today, but I think that it is most significant for people to understand that just after the Civil War, there was a term called Reconstruction, or an era called Reconstruction. And literally, it was about reconstructing the states, you know, the North, the South, etc., etc. And Reconstruction was a very radical time. Understand that, and recall that Abraham Lincoln was a Republican. This is also the president who signed into legislature the abolition of slavery. And in that time of Reconstruction, there were 22 freed black men who held office in Congress between 1869 and 1900. Now, there are many who say that when Reconstruction ended was with the last Congress in 1877. What I want to cover is some of the feats that occurred in this country, because I believe that sometimes both sides of the aisle forget the rich history and possibly conveniently look past the opportunities that we may have squandered in the past. And I want to call some recognition to those opportunities, because I genuinely believe that they may be coming back around again, or that window may be coming back around again. So I want to start with the first senator that was elected to the Senate was Hiram Rhodes Revels. Now, he was a Republican. And mind you, most freed black slaves were Republicans. The Black Party was the Republican Party. Much so how people associate the Democratic Party now with the Black Party of choice. Well, it was the Republicans, because once again, it was Abraham Lincoln, for all intents and purposes, and has gone down in history as the president who freed the slaves. He filled the vacated seat of Confederate President Jefferson Davis. And that was in, I believe, North Carolina. In 1869, fellow Republican Joseph H. Rainey was the first black member of the U.S. House of Representatives. So this is when we were making changes. If you understand that with the passage of the 13th, the 14th, and the 15th Amendments under Lincoln and that administration, it not only freed the slaves, it gave them the same rights as white men, and it also gave them the right to vote. With that change, there was millions of new voters that were influxed to the political scheme. And at that time, those black voters were placing black politicians both in the Senate and the House. And there were many black officials and politicians in that time, again, 1869 to 1900. I want to go ahead and point out as well Congressman Robert Brown Elliott, 1871. Subsequent to him, and the next 6 to 7 years, there was Benjamin S. Turner, Joseph T. Walls, Robert C. DeLarge, and Jefferson H. Long. I invite all of you to Google and look up these very brave men. Because again, understand that civil rights was not a brand new dynamic come the 60s. These same men were fighting for civil rights of black freedmen 100 years prior. So it was not a new battle. There were things that changed. and we'll go into that. Much of what I don't believe that people understand is that in 1866, when there seems to be the forming of the Ku Klux Klan, much of that was for the purpose of regaining white democratic control in the elections, all right? And that was a declaration made by the founders of the Ku Klux Klan, because the Republican Party was also named radical. It was not right extremist. The term was radical Republicans. And much at that time, and I can understand the labeling, because this was a party that came in and said, what we know of this country will be no more. A black man will be considered equal to a white man. And I got to tell you, the South just was not understanding that. And I'm not talking about hate or anything. I'm just saying this was not what they were receiving. They did not believe it. They did not absorb it, and i.e. the Civil War. Understand also that at the turn of the century, the black population in the United States, and that would be in the year 1900, grew to 8.8 million people, all right? And again, this was having a significant impact on the country as it was currently unionized, if you would, as it saw itself as one whole. There's one particular congressman that I would like to point out, which I think is an interesting reflection, if you would, of where we may be right now. He was a freeborn black man, and this is what is written in the histrionics. So I'm using that term. It's not my term. It's the history coiffure's term. And his name is James O'Hara. You say, well, Miss Cleo, that's an Irishman's name. He was Irish West Indian, a mulatto, as the history books have also labeled him. And he was the only black member of the 48th Congress between 1883 and 1885. Now, you will notice that in the history books as well, the radical reconstruction, organized as the history books call it, by the Republicans, came to a compromise demise in 1877. And Congressman O'Hara, North Carolina, 2nd Black District is how they labeled it in those days, dedicated himself to restoring the civil rights that were stripped away from the black community at the end of the Congressional Reconstruction in 1877. And so, whereas just 3 or 4 years earlier, there were far more black men in Congress. However, when James O'Hara, and it took him 4 different times, he ran 4 different times. And in when he did serve, 1883 to 1885, and ran again, there were some tamperings going on with the votes, etc., etc. And I don't need to spell that out how that ended. So I think it is important for us to recognize that black people in America had a window of opportunity, that this country had a window of opportunity, and then things took an uncertain change, and people became nervous, and so much now is the change so different. It is now the Democratic Party, as I said, is the black party, and the Republican Party is the white party, or the rich man party, or the man party. And it is interesting to go back and look at the things that went awry. to look at the things where we had done so much and we had given so much, because there were so many lives lost in the Civil War, both black and white, red and yellow. Many lives were lost. War is war. War has casualties. And so we made this grand sacrifice to come together and to try and build again. And the movement was there. However, there are those who come from a school of thought that the radical Republicans were simply in a position to want to glean all of that power that would come from the freed black man, because surely they would be closely associated with the freedom of black men in the United States as it was so formed at that time. And so it is very odd to me to go back to this history and to refresh in myself, because the foundation is important. We are coming back around to a window where now women are also pulled up to this same political table. And we have people who are sexually oriented differently, and that's not my term. But again, same-sex couples, same-sex loving people is what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to keep it in terms that are not inflammatory, just so that we can see that the window of opportunity is coming back around for us, all right? And it seems to be cyclical, you understand? So we really have got to step outside of the bad knowledge, or the rather incomplete knowledge, because I don't want to judge the knowledge. So it's not bad knowledge, it's incomplete. And that we need, as a people who reside in this place, we need to be responsible and accountable for the knowledge that we have of our political history. Because all of these big pep rallies are fabulous, eh? I want somebody to show me the tab. But that's another conversation for a whole different show. And probably not conversations with Cleo either. However, this big party and all of this and all of the embracing and all of the celebrating and all of the shouting, I am hoping in the next couple of weeks to be able to bring to you all some additional history on how the party system came into place. And surely you must know I want to give just a little bit of civics histrionics on the Electoral College. Because in my continuing to educate myself, I am flabbergasted by information that I just did not have. Incomplete was the information that I have. So when I get a fuller picture, because when you have only portions of a picture, that's all you know. So when I get a fuller picture, I like to share. So this is going to be my response to the ever closer creeping political election that is taking place in these United States. All right, my dears, we are going to bring this wonderful show on this delicious Wednesday to a most joyous and happy end. Once again, mad love out and appreciation to Winona Hatter for joining us today and bringing some more information and some more knowledge and some more clarity to the food supply and how big business and big lobbies are not really caring about how we sustain ourselves. So get out there, get active. You know what I say. It's about the community. If we don't do it, it's not going to get done for us. So again, check back with us frequently to get all of her links and whatnot. We'll have it up on conversationswithcleo.com. We're still doing a little bit of construction on the site, so please be patient with us. But this is an ongoing thing. This is not just in the moment. So we will have all of the pertinent information available to you. I love you. Have a wonderful day. And join me on Friday when we will have Michael Karmatz of Flygrip. That's going to be a good conversation. I'm going to send you all out with a preview of my latest released single from my upcoming spoken word CD, Full Moon Madness. And this is What If. At the end of a long day, I like to retreat to the veranda in my backyard, stare up at the sky, gaze at the stars, drink a little wine, smoke a little something sometimes. I open my mind and my heart to all the possibilities. And one night I thought, what if all